Hello and welcome to the Angels Costumes Behind the Scenes podcasts. I'm Jeremy Angel.
I'm Richard Green.
And Jonathan Lippman.
In this next interview, I was very lucky to talk to Jenty Yates, costume designer, Oscar winner for the film Gladiator, and I think it gave a very interesting interview and insight into the way she works within the industry.
I have a question for both of you two, actually. You've got a very good relationship with Jenty. Jonathan, you've got a fantastic relationship with Julian. How did that start, in the sense of, I don't mean obviously you get on, but how did Jenty become your customer, Richard? Was there just, it was just luck of the draw, or how did that happen?
I think it probably was luck of the draw. I'm trying to think when I first started working with her, and I can't remember whether it was An Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain, which has got to be one of the weirdest titles for a production, or it was some of the comic strip things. But
I think you go back to comic strip, because it was costuming.
Yeah, I think comic strip was before Englishman, wasn't it? So
and she, all the stuff she did with Peter Richardson, which was part of all of Channel 4, that she used to do a lot of work for. And then, because I remember being her costumier at that point, and because most of the work that she was doing at that time was contemporary, she had good relationships with us, Carlo Manzi, Roger Burton, and BBC.
Yeah.
And then I think she started to, was it Jude? Was the first period one, Michael Winterbottom?
Jude was certainly very early. I remember in Camden her coming in and us talking about that. And that would have been 96. So that was the year after The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill but Came Down a Mountain. But
And that might have been one of her first, we should really IMDb this, but that must have been one of her first period jobs.
Yeah, and she mentioned it, of course, Plunkett and McLean, which was a few years later. But again, we did that. And then, of course, 2000 was Gladiator.
Well, Plunkett was Jake Scott, Ridley's son, and that was her introduction, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, which is how she said Ridley got to know about her, because she worked with Ridley Jr. Before she worked with Ridley Sr.
And it just shows you the fate, serendipity, if you like, because Jenty wasn't the original designer on Plunkett and McLean.
Was she not?
Who was?
Arianne Phillips.
Oh, God.
Which is the reason why I was the person that Jenty dealt with on that film, because I was previously dealing with it through Angels with Arianne,
right.
And Arianne left and Jenty came in, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Are there many of your customers, Jonathan, that you were costumier for, or are most of the people you work with along the people you also came up with?
Yeah, there were Jenny, Sandy. They were all people who I had developed relationships with as their costumier.
Sadly, most of the ones that I worked with as a costumier are no longer with us.
Well, that's why I asked the question of Jonathan. I was being polite.
God.
But there were also quite a large number of costumiers that then subsequently became designers.
Well, I think we should get into the interview now. So I hope you all enjoy this interview with Richard and Jenty. If you have any questions for us, any feedback, or just someone you'd like us to speak to, please email us at podcast@angels.co.uk. And here is the interview with Jenty and Richard.
Hello, my name is Richard Green, Production Director of Angels Costumes, and today I'm extremely proud and pleased to be talking to Jenty Yates, costume designer. Jenty and I go back a long, long way, both personally and professionally, but today I'll be asking her a few different questions from the normal ones, which are, how much budget do you have for costume hire, and do you think there's anything left in the bottle, or shall we order another one? Jenty, hello.
Very funny. Hello, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Very, very well indeed. So the purpose of these broadcasts is to give people who don't know how the costume industry works an insight into how it does. As I said in my introduction, you're a costume designer of renown and repute. But how did you get into the costume business?
Well, I went to dress design, pattern cutting and dressmaking college.
Right. Which one?
It was called Katinka. It was a private one in the Cromwell Road.
Mm.
It basically turned out a lot of debs who could do, you know, sew on a button. But
right.
Pattern cutting was brilliant. And the dress design was brilliant as well. But I started off wanting to be a fashion designer. And I didn't really know about costume designers or film or anything like that until I'd had a couple of years of disaster at Steinberg and Sons in the city, wholesale fashion manufacturers.
Right.
Where I just felt completely suicidal. I was just changing collars and, again, adding buttons. And it was just, it was not for me. But I'd realised by then that to, in order to set up and even to create a collection, I just did not have the money. I did not have any money. My mother was a widow. I'm living on a widow's mite. I knew nobody rich to back me.
This is before we met, of course.
Yes, this was way back when. And I went and worked for Vogue and Butterick. I was Miss Butterick for a good couple of seasons.
Oh, the fabric people.
Yes, well, and patterns. Yeah. Vogue patterns.
Yes. Patterns.
And then did a various sort of like all sorts of things, working in Spain, etc. And my boyfriend of the time was an editor, and he said, you really should try and get into television and film. And so I started as an assistant, and started to grow my contacts. And I did commercials forever. They were my bread and butter. And basically, I was very fortunate because I got employed on a 20th Century Fox film very early on called Quest for Fire. And I did the whole film. And so I came back to London with that under my belt. I still didn't really understand film, but, you know.
Quest for Fire was the one about the sort of prehistoric tribes, wasn't it? And didn't they invent a language for it?
Yes, they did. And I spent 6 months in Shepperton car park in one of the huts that are no longer there, of course, just distressing huge amounts of elk skin, black bear, you name it.
Glamorous.
Well, it was, we had to be defleed every sort of 6 weeks.
Well, presumably the problem with that, and I was going to talk to you about historical accuracy, but we can touch on it at this point, is that you were sort of finding a compromise between what looked as though it was believable and what was modest, in the sense that you couldn't have people with various bits of flesh exposed too much there. It must have been an interesting challenge, that one.
Well, there was me, another girl, and four Wimbledon students, and we just literally destroyed fur skin after fur skin after fur skin. And then the SAG strike happened and Fox pulled out. So Garth Thomas, our producer, just ran around the world and found French money and French Canadian money. They changed the entire crew. But the costume designer that came from Canada kept me on because he didn't understand how the costumes went onto a body. So I was very lucky. I got my whole suit.
Can you just explain what the SAG strike was?
Well, basically, SAG is the union for actors in America. And the only film...
Screen Actors Guild.
Screen Actors Guild.
Got it. Fine.
And basically, the only movies that they were continuing with were with very old people in, like Ragtime and On Golden Pond. And those were the only ones because they were so worried their actors would die. Right. Everything else was shut down.
So that was your start. And you've gone on to bigger and better things or perhaps greater things. What initially excites you and draws you to a project? When you first, presumably, somebody rings you up and says, I'm thinking of, and we'll talk about your association with Ridley Scott a little bit down the line, I think. But somebody phones you up, Ridley Scott phones you up and says, hi, Janti, I'm working on this. I'm going to send you the script. What actually gets you drawn and gets your juices flowing?
To be honest, and you mentioned Ridley, which I've had a terrific relationship with.
Of course.
Basically, it really is the subject matter. I don't really mind if it's period or it's contemporary or, as you well know, futuristic.
Yes, or prehistoric. But
prehistoric. I get completely wrapped up in the new project. And whether they're paying me or not, I will spend days and days researching.
Yeah.
And I still, to this day, I go to libraries, I go to especially art galleries, which are fantastic for reference, whether it's contemporary or otherwise. I will go to museums, and also, thank goodness, we have the internet, which is just like a miracle.
I mean, I have to say that in the premises at Hendon, we have some designer offices which are available for designers like Janti to use, and I love going into her office, partly because there's normally a few snacks in there which I can snaffle, but more importantly, just the pin boards are wall to wall images and reference photographs. It's a pleasure watching how you start to construct and do your preliminary research before you've even touched the costume. You're thinking about things, shapes, colors, different sort of fabrics and things, and it really is a treat going in there and looking at them, because some of them of course just have a notice board that's got a calendar up, but yours is chock-a-block of imagery. And I'm a nosy blighter, so it's good to see what's going on. So,
well, thank you for that. I hadn't realised it had that effect.
Well, why do you think I go in there? It's not just for the sweets. So, do you prefer designing for men or for women?
Oh, I couldn't care less. I don't mind if they're troglodytes or children or giants or female, male. At the moment, we're working on something which is set in the Middle Ages. And I'm so loving doing the men as much as I'm loving doing the women, because the men were quite vain in those days, and their fabrics, and although they were only wearing tunics and tabards, it's a wonderful era to design for. And I think from that point of view, fabric is exceptionally important. I spent days, weeks, months just researching, and then I need to go and get fabrics. Yeah. That excites me beyond belief.
I'm interested to learn that you're, in your opinion, men are no longer vain, which men were vain in those days. Yeah, okay.
Well, the vanity was quite huge, and especially in the upper classes and the royal.
Yes, well, I suppose without the Ferrari or the Porsche or any other status symbol, you basically it's how you look, the quality of your armour, and I guess the sort of horse you ride. Yeah. Look at that, he's only got a 17-hander. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you've done with Ridley. I mean, famously, you've got an Oscar. You've got a costume Oscar. I'm talking to an Oscar winner here for Gladiator.
Yes, I mean, I don't know how that came about.
Sorry, I do. You worked hard and long and deserved it, and it was a spectacular film. Various people can criticise it for various things, but what you can't do is criticise it for the frocks.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. Basically, I was filming with a gang in Northern Ireland, and I got this call to go and meet Sir Ridley Scott, and it was like, it was the best day of my life getting that call.
Yes.
It's like he's been my hero for decades, and just going to actually meet him was spectacular. It was the most exciting time I've ever had. And then I got the job, which is extraordinary. Why me? Why a girl? You know, fighting, armor, battle. You know, it was not really a done thing for a female costume designer. It was more a male thing on the whole. Yeah. Back, this was in 99, so we're going 21 years now.
And you've almost become his sort of staff costume designer now. I mean, how many have you actually done with?
Do you know, I don't know, Richard. I've never counted, and I never take it for granted.
No.
Assume. So, you know, you're as good as your last movie, and if you get asked to do the next one, fantastic.
I mean, I have to say, and again, one of the things that you do, which some others don't, is you always make a point of introducing me to your actors and to your people when they come in. And it was quite thrilling to have him and his team. Do you remember when we set up that fitting room, those emergency fittings that we had to do downstairs? And you're really good at involving Angels and the staff at Angels with those things. So again,
well, we couldn't have done it without you. We really couldn't have. This is when on All the Money in the World, when Kevin Spacey had got the worst press ever and had been fired from everything, and still movies to this day not come out. Starred in, and we so needed you. You were indispensable, changing the sizes of everything. We worked all the weekends, and it was we shot just 2 weeks, in fact, but it was 68 scenes.
Because you had to basically redo all of the scenes that he'd been in, didn't you? You had to recreate
them. With Christopher Plummer. And, you know, Ridley and Christopher did an amazing job, very much, you know, lastminute.com. But we couldn't have done it without having those meetings on the Saturday and the Friday night at Angels. I was so, I'll never, ever forget how kind you all were. And your tailors were in, and your makers were in, and everybody really put their hands to the wheel and were fantastic.
Did we have to recreate a tie?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the extraordinary thing. That was the only thing that we could not find, because this was the other thing, producers beware. They had not saved the costumes for all the other actors. They had released them from embargo, and they had not kept them the 6 months that we normally do keep embargo. And we found, extraordinarily, we went through your rails and we found Timothy Hutton's suits. We found nearly everything except for this close-up of a tie on the young Getty. And it was a key shot. We had to dye the fabric and get it made up, which you so kindly did.
Just so people know, embargo, basically costumes, if a production rents costumes from us, then they belong to us and they go back into our stock. That's how we function. But on productions where they think there's a possibility they may have to do some reshoots, or if Janti's designed a particular costume and she doesn't want it to appear on a commercial 3 weeks before her film's released, then we put those costumes on embargo. They're locked into a safe room within the Hendon premises, and then they're not available for anybody else until such time as the film's release normally. And in this particular instance, they embargoed some of the costumes, but not all of them. And it's unusual that you need to do that many reshoots. Of course it is. I mean, that was an extraordinarily rare case, thank God. But it was interesting.
Yes.
Which project have you most enjoyed designing?
Oh,
hard question. I know. All of them.
I love every single one. I put my entire heart and soul. You marry a film anyway.
You really do, don't you? You basically live, breathe, and do nothing else but that production when you're on it.
And anyway, I'm getting up at 5:30 every morning, whether we're shooting or whether I'm just coming up to prep in your own premises.
Yeah.
And we don't finish till 8:39. So actually, this little break that we're having now, after 6 months of that, 6 days a week, has been so well received in the Yates household. But I think probably the one I'm the most proud of is Gladiator, because it was a huge success. And I think Ridley's very proud of it as well. And so many people have seen it, not once, not twice, but three or four times, and it still stands up.
No, but it is in my opinion a spectacular in the truest sense of the word. You know, there is spectacle there. I think it's great.
Well, I was terrified every single day of my life. I hardly slept all the way through the shooting. We were getting up at 2:30 or 3 to go down and help with the huge amount of extras, because this was really pre-CGI. So we were fitting and dressing 3,000 extras every single day in Malta and in Morocco.
Yeah.
Only for like periods of 2 weeks or a week here, a week there. But it was still massive. Massive.
But you must enjoy these, either that or you're a masochist, because Kingdom of Heaven had the same kind of numbers attached to it.
Yes, it did. Kingdom of Heaven was enormous as well. I guess I'm a masochist.
And then you do a man stranded on Mars in a spacesuit.
Yeah.
So that's just that brought its own problems, didn't it? But
that was that was nearly as big a box office success as Gladiator, believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, again, I thought it was a great film, and I thought it was very cleverly designed by a costume designer of my acquaintance.
Well, I have to say a lot of shoots subsequent to that have nicked my ideas of spacesuits and you don't see much that's any different anymore.
And you spend a lot of time, I know, again, researching those and developing them and thinking about them and figuring out how you could actually put somebody in a space helmet without it fogging up every time they breathed.
Oh, God. Well, Prometheus we actually created, which we could have done CGI, but the producers were holding their hands up in shock at the price. We had 11 monitors in the space helmet. We had 1,000 LEDs, so we were lighting the actors, actually lighting them with these tiny LEDs. We obviously had batteries in the back for the breathing thereof and the condensation getting rid of. And we had to wire them for sound. It was the most complicated. I mean, that was Michael Mooney.
Yes.
He's a genius, and he will always be by my side, hopefully, whenever we do anything spacey again.
Well, actually, and again, you've kind of preempted me there, because I was going to say, how important is the relationship with your costume supervisor and the rest of your crew? I know Michael, certainly on that one, was an essential part of it, but the people, the team that you assemble that kind of back you up.
Essential. I mean, Michael is now associate spacesuit designer. He's basically not an assistant designer anymore. He's, you know, superseded that. And my actual supervisor, it's incredibly important I have a good relationship with them, because they are the sergeant major of the film crew. They do the hiring, the firing, the overtime, the trucks, the all of that stuff, which I cannot tell you how deadly it is to me.
Yes, I'm creative, darling. Don't worry. Don't bother me about wardrobe trucks. Now, again, you've already said some extraordinarily nice things about us, which I have to say, folks, I wasn't paying her to do. And I think the relationship that we have, that Angels have with you, is a good one. And relationships with costume houses generally are important, aren't they? I mean, you can spend money on making a spacesuit or making Russell Crowe's wolfskin cape, whatever it is. But for the bulk of most films, you need stock costumes.
Absolutely. And you're the first place I would ever think of, and the last.
Well, I think we'll stop the interview there. Then that's it. I can't. the check's in the post. No, the other thing that I think that's come out of here, because I will need to draw it to a close fairly soon, is there's a couple of things which is constantly being identified. I think the first thing is that you have to put your work in first. You have to start at the beginning. You have to do your sort of groundwork and get everything like that sorted before you can soar to these high heights.
Absolutely. And basically, I've often said in interviews similar to this, you're completely in the period wherever it is. And then you can, excuse my French, fuck about with it.
Yeah. If you Again, for people who aren't in the business, this is a technical term, meaning it's spelt differently, guys.
Yeah,
Frocks, exactly. Frocks under construction is
that's very good. You need to have all that knowledge, and then you can veer off.
Yes, because I used this phrase the other day, you need to know what the rules are before you can bend the rules.
Well, exactly, that absolutely is it. And that sums up entirely my attitude to costume design. And Ridley loves to go off track and off message, but only up to a point. He won't have, for example, purple. Well, he did have orange spacesuits, but, you know, he won't go that mad, because he's quite logical.
Yeah.
And other directors I've worked with, I did a film with Michael Mann, and I also did a film with Jean-Jacques Anno. They want to see the real thing, the best that you can give.
Yeah.
That's always a challenge anyway.
So I'm 18 years old, I wish. I want to be a costume designer and be up there giving my acceptance speech in Hollywood. What advice do you give me?
Basically, I would get a very good training. I would go to get yourself into Wimbledon or Bristol or somewhere that has a very established costume design training. And then you'll understand breaking down costume, you'll understand dyeing costume, you'll understand fabrics, you'll understand cutting, and you'll make corsets and things like that. You can't just walk into it and think you can do it, because you can't. You need all that knowledge, and you're learning all the time anyway. Mm. And then I don't think there's anything wrong in starting being a junior.
No.
Assistant, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, because you learn 100 things every day.
Yes. I mean, I think, again, you're right. You can have the most brilliant abstract concept ideas about costumes, but unless you know how they're constructed and how fabrics will work and how things will fit together, can't do it, can you?
You can't, exactly. You really do need to educate yourself.
Yeah.
And regarding making contacts, I knew nobody in this industry, and literally it was like one at a time. And then, for example, the first film, I met Penny Rose in a bar and just was introduced to her. And she went, what did she say? She said, how do you feel about fur? I mean, I'm ambivalent. I can't stand it, darling. I can't cut fur. So you start tomorrow, one day, and that's, you know, that was a year later.
When you,
so you never know.
You said you worked on commercials. I mean, Ridley Scott, of course, RSA. Did you ever do any of his? Never. That's interesting. That's interesting. I always kind of thought that's how you two had built up the relationship. I really didn't know that. That's interesting.
No, I've never worked for RSA. Mm. I had never worked for Ridley, that's for sure. Mm. And the reason that he became aware of all of us was his son, Jake, shot this very enjoyed, should I say, movie called Bunkett and McLean.
Oh, yes. Yes, we made High Women's coats for that.
Exactly. We made all their outfits and repeats.
Yeah.
And it was because he'd come in, Jake, he'd say, oh, show Dad the rushes over the weekend. And I go, have a bit of a tremble. I didn't really believe him, to be honest. And so Ridley, in the end, took the lighting cameraman, he took the Steadicam operator, he took makeup, and he took me from Jake's film.
Fantastic.
We were so lucky.
Yeah.
I think he was just having a clean sweep.
Plunkett and McLean, I didn't think was a bad... I mean, it looked very nice. Again, he has to say, but it's true.
It was a good movie. It was really good.
It was a good little movie. It was a good sort of Georgian romp.
Exactly.
Really,
and of course, the critics, wanted to knock Jake down because... father,
of who he was,
and he couldn't understand the fact that he'd put rock and roll music to a period film. And you know, I don't know, 2 years later the Heath Ledger movie came out. I've completely forgotten its name. Anyway, you know, We Will Rock You during the jousting. The Knight's Tale, raved about.
Yeah, well, and then, of course, you get Moulin Rouge.
Exactly.
And it works very well. I mean, actually, I think some of that sort of rock music stuff works remarkably well.
Well, I don't think it was, to be honest, I don't think it wasn't right the right time. It was too kind of ahead of its time. You know, I think these things, it was just terribly sad. It was just... really sad. Anyway,
Uppy, I've enjoyed this. I hope you have.
Well, absolutely. Nothing like talking about myself. And Angels, of course.
No, it's really good. And I do think, you know, to sum up, people who are thinking of entering the industry, you do need to get that groundwork, that framework, put your time in. Don't expect to be running a large film unit crew or designing a major movie the second week that you start. And be guided by people who really have done it, put their time in, and deservedly are at the top of their tree.
Hear, hear. Absolutely, Richard. Absolutely.
Janty, I love you very much. I will speak to you soon.
Lots of love. Take care.
Yeah, lots of love to you.
Bye now. Bye.
Bye.
That was Richard's conversation with Janty. That was just a brilliant interview to listen to. I didn't know some of those things about Janty at all.
Fun, wasn't it? Well, the fact she swears.
I'm not sure if it's the fact she swears or how good you are at quickly figuring out how to spell the word correctly. I will not lie. I will probably be using it.
You've got to take into account the amazing experiences that she's had along the way in terms of all those different mediums that she's worked with.
Yes, I mean, have you ever seen Quest for Fire?
Not me.
It's probably before you.
It's a lot of fur.
Yeah, it was, you know, at the time, I think it was absolutely panned because, of course, they mixed up. There were various tribes and they had various sort of levels of technology. I think some of them even had machine guns. No, they didn't. But
and they made their own language.
They made up their own language. I'm pretty certain they used a linguist to actually create and sort of do all of these grunts and groans. I think it was subtitled. It was a long time ago. And I don't think it was a particularly good film. Although the fur looked nice, Janty, if you're listening.
But I mean, she's worked on some amazing films. And I mean, just taking some of the ones that she's done with Ridley, if you take Gladiator, Prometheus and Martian, I mean, three just massive films, all different looks. And she has stories about all of them, which are amazing. I mean, the crowd scenes with Gladiator, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the one that she talked about where they had to reshoot a load of it because of circumstances, which again was... Certainly, we remember it as an extraordinarily interesting time. Interesting being a euphemism for stressful, I think. Don't you think?
I think it was something like, I think they say on the tour, it's something like between 30 days from when they announced they'd recast to when they'd finished shooting for that, which is crazy.
I've just done a bit of a cheat on Quest for Fire. Anthony Burgess, the novelist, created the language, and the gestures and movements were advised by Desmond Morris, the anthropologist.
Oh, so they all try to emulate Kubrick?
Yes, a touch of 2000 and Space Odyssey. Yeah.
You said when you met Janty, she was known as a contemporary designer. How did Angels contemporary department actually come to be? Because it wasn't something we always had.
Yeah, I mean, they're, it's probably true to say, isn't it? In the 80s, 90s, there was this kind of explosion, I suppose. There had been a number of sort of costume designers of the Anthony Mendelsohn type that had been around, Judy Harris that had been around for ages and did those big prestige films. But I suppose with the advent of things like music videos and Channel 4, which actually was an incredibly important launch pad for a lot of new talent and things. I mean, when it opened, was it Patanyang Kippabang or something like that? But they took on those five go mad Dorset type things, didn't they, which called for costume. So I suppose there was an explosion about the time that you were setting up the men or the modern department at Angels and then obviously moving into management with people that you'd worked with when you were setting up that whole modern department, which again was something that Angels hadn't, you know, nobody had really done. Nobody had really created a department, and you and Tim had that vision to supply costumes for modern productions as opposed to people going out and buying them.
It came about as a result of, as you say, an explosion in the marketplace in terms of contemporary production.
Yeah, I mean, Morse.
And what were all these people going to do, these productions going to do with the clothing that they acquired? And we were picking clothing up from them as well as buying for new productions. And there was a flood of drama in television.
There was, wasn't there? There absolutely was. Now, I was going to say, you know, if you went back to the 60s, let's think about television for a moment, you know, Play for Today, normally contemporary, not many people. But once they started doing more location work and bigger things and those more adventurous large scale productions, then I suppose there's a bigger demand for costume.
The first drama I remember is that we did the responsible for the whole series was Inspector Morse.
Yes, I was to say Morse. Yeah.
And Chris Burt and Ted Childs. And in fact, Angels got a credit.
Yeah, we did everything, didn't we? I mean, you know, if there was a cricket team, yeah. we got in the yeah. cricket gear for it. If there was the one that was set with Magic Flute, you know, the costumes came. It was a great series, that, or series of series, that.
Year after year.
Mm. Going from the contemporary department and setting that up, it's actually a nice segue into the interview that I conducted, which we're releasing next week, which is with Ray Holman, because Ray actually says that his favorite period to design for is actually contemporary. That's where he likes to work the most. So Ray is who we interview. I interview next week.
Oh, I look forward to hearing that.
And presumably you might mention Doctor Who occasionally.
We did. I mean, it's not every day you get to sit down with someone who's designed for four of the Doctors. But actually, we spoke about Fleabag a lot more than we did about Doctor Who. And I won't lie, I did use the interview as an excuse with my wife to finally finish watching the last two episodes of Fleabag. Ray has really strong passion about education and how it fits into costume. He's very involved in his old course and old university. He has apprentices that work with him on Doctor Who. And it was a really interesting in-depth chat into history of Ray and his feelings on the education as well as his feelings on his career. I hope you enjoy it next week. And here's a small snippet of that interview.
I was suddenly staff as an assistant costume designer, got called into the head of costumes saying, okay, there's a 13-part police series that needs a costume designer. We think it's time. We'd like you to do it. Where the director would like you to do it, the producer would like you to do it. And I kind of nearly fell off the chair and said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do a police series. I don't want to do this. And Al Barnett, and he was head of costume at Pebble Mill at that moment, and he said, just do it. I'll send you on some. I said, I don't know how to manage a department, so they sent me on management courses, and I did it. And it was a police series, and nobody wanted to do a police series, but it was great.